Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter, the namesake.
I'm Chip Patterson, and Kyle is, he has power back in the content shed. And you're packing your bags. You've got all your bathing suits ready. You're gonna be there soon. In a short 9 hours, you'll be at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know if my body's prepared for this time change because I had kids, go to bed early, and then it's just I'm gonna be a mess. It's gonna be not great, but man, I could not be more excited about, I think that we do this thing when we're in sports media and we're like, oh, another tournament, another week, another, birdies and bogeys. And I'm really excited about Pebble Beach. I've never been out there, never been to Monterey. I've heard not only is the scene great, but just the food, we're going to play some golf. It's a week that I'm incredibly grateful for my job.
I'm back in it again with Big Little Lies on HBO. This is not a promo, but do you watch that show?
No, I've heard of it. We just got done with Chernobyl. So.
It's set in Monterey. And oh. Yeah, so like as we've been, I think it's actually shot in Canada, but like as we've been there, I've been like watching it with Parker and I'm like, oh yeah. So we'll be seeing the cliff shots that they're imitating on this show once we get into it. All right. Well, look, there's on Wednesday, we'll be getting our final expert picks, our final call your shot type moments. So now let's keep it maybe a little bit bigger now. As we start to dig into some storylines, and then of course you're ranking the field, an annual tradition for every single major championship, right?
Yeah, Masters we go like 1 to 88 or whatever. They give me a break with the other three majors. I just have to go 1 to 25, which is really we've talked about this extensively. It's really all that matters. Really, not even 25, but. So it's a little bit easier. You're not like trying to figure out where, Scott Stallings fits in. Is he the 45th best or the 61st best in the field? So it's a little easier for the other majors.
All right. So I'm going to start with a more obscure storyline because I'm not as dialed into it. And I wanted to see what your feeling was with this being, the 100th anniversary of Pebble Beach's existence. What's going to be some of the fanfare or the celebration? What kind of impact do you think that's going to have on the grounds?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you're going to hear, I think this is how it's going to play out. I think you'll hear less about, so there's three things here. The 100 years, just obviously it being Pebble Beach and sort of the scenery and like the it's the St. Andrews of US Opens or whatever. And then also the major champions that it's produced. Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Tom Kite, Tiger Woods, Lanny Watkins won a PGA there, and then Graham McDowell in 2010. The caliber of champions it's produced is unbelievable. And so I think the two things you're going to hear actually more about, I think, is the scenery, just the whole primetime deal. Like that part's going to be, it's going to be awesome. And then the champions, like just who fits into that class of player. I don't know if you're going to hear a ton about, there's some really interesting 100 year stuff. Jeff Shackelford's had some really good stuff on this. He wrote about the 1929 USAM that was played at Pebble and just sort of how it got started. Jim Nance had a really cool piece on Golf Digest this month, just because he obviously lives there, loves it there, is pretty deep in the history. And it's a pretty fascinating story because, you know, and Sean Martin pointed this out, and we'll probably talk to him about this on Wednesday, but it could have ended up being like just houses. Like it was going to be it was going to be developed as kind of a housing district. And thankfully, they're going to move the golf sort of more inland. Thankfully, they did the opposite and put the golf right on the water and then houses, I think, surrounding it sort of or on the other side of it. So it is the St. Andrews of U.S. Open venues. And I think it's pretty cool that they're going back there for the 100th year anniversary.
So we've got four Pebble Beach in terms of its course design. The like Pebble Beach as it is sort of presents all the challenges that you would want for a very true and fair test. But as Phil yeah. Mickelson said after he won the Pro-Am in February, you know, the course that we played today is nothing like what the course is going to look like after the USGA gets its hands on it. And I, you know, when presented with that thought, I've thought about the greens for sure. You know, you can... The rough is already going to be what it is at Pebble Beach. I was just wondering that, like, other than trying to combat the wind or the weather, and right now the weather looks like it should be pretty pleasant, at least for this time of year in that area. You know, what are the places or the areas where if you are fearing the USGA, you know, being the villain this week, where are you looking that might happen?
You mean in terms of what holes or like just the way the course is set up or what?
Yeah, like is it sight lines? Is it going to come down to like really nitty gritty complaints? Because to me, if you're going to be mad about a couple tee boxes or a couple sight lines or just a couple adjustments from that standpoint, like those are gripes. Those are not real issues that are impacting the tournament. Everyone has to play those same sight lines. But if... you know, everything is pleasant and then the greens get really sped up and then all of a sudden the wind kicks in. Then we've got a situation where, you know, the best score that you could expect to have on that given day is a 73 or 74 and we'll get Zach Johnson. We've lost the course out here. So that I guess that's my question is like, is there a concern or where is the concern that the USGA might be able to impact it in a way that would bring out the griping from the players?
What'd you put down for best score, by the way? We have to fill out the like sort of our predictions. What was your best score for the tournament?
Best score, so the best round score or who what I thought
yeah,
the
yeah,
winner
best,
was?
Best round score.
64.
Oh, 7 under?
Yeah.
That'd be sick. I put 66. I think that to answer your question, I think this goes back to the fact that Pebble has super small greens to begin with. And, you know, Patrick Cantlay posted a video of this and look, like, I don't really feel that sorry for you. Like if you're in really deep rough, that's not on the green, just hit the green. But I think when you combine Pebble's really small greens with how much they've grown the rough up around the greens, I think, and it all depends on pin placement, right? Like are you putting the pin, you know, 3 paces from the fringe, which is 2 paces from rough that's as tall as Brian Harman. That's not great, you know? And so
get out of here.
I use that in one of my pieces. So I think that is where you'll hear the majority of it just because Pebble's notorious for having small greens and the USGA is notorious for building up these fortresses around the greens to begin with, and it's going to be even more pronounced at Pebble this year.
So you get the, like, you're just so thick in the rough that, like, how in the world are you going to expect to be able to knock it onto this green anywhere close to the pin if the pin is, like, 10 yards away from you?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, when you and I talked to Sean last week, you can start talking yourself into somebody who's just magic around the greens because everybody's going to miss greens. And so who's going to be able to chop out? But you know, part of that is like, there's going to be a lot of luck, right?
100%.
You know, and I don't like that. I don't think that's great. I almost prefer, and I know it's been interesting because players have kind of, you know, you saw Rory say, we don't need 2 open championships. And what he means by that is, I want rough. I want narrow fairways. I don't want run out like you see at Opens. But I sort of like the Pinehurst deal where, look, if you're missing greens, it just rolls out. It sheds bad shots away from their intended target. And while you are penalized here because you're in really thick rough, it's more of a luck of the lie instead of at Pinehurst, it's like, how far are you away from the target based on the type of shot you hit?
Mm. What did you have for your winning score?
Winning score, I think I put 280, which would be four under.
Yeah, I had 270.
You had two what?
279.
Oh, there's only been one score here that won at over par. Everything else has been even or better. Graham McDowell, I think, was even in 10. Tiger was obviously 12 under. That might be a little bit of fake news because the second best score was three over in 2000. But yeah, I mean, I think under par is winning, especially if they don't get weather.
You mentioned a wizard around the greens. The Phil Mickelson aspect to this is going to be one that I think has a lot of steam on the golf front, but especially as we sort of hand over golf, and not to get too like inside media or whatever, but this is Fox's first crack this season, right? I mean, this is like they are addressing their audience as though this is their first time getting to address the audience. I am anticipating many, many minutes and like segments and A blocks and D blocks and video packages dedicated to Phil Mickelson, both his pursuit of the career Grand Slam, his history at Pebble Beach, what he has become in terms of being sort of this social media phenomenon at age 48 within the sport. I think that I'm worried that we are going to get Phil overload from the conversation standpoint, and that his performance on the course, my prediction is that it will neither be elite nor terrible. And that middling portion is like, well, we've got to talk about him, but he's just there. And is there any reason that I should be feeling any differently about this?
No, I mean, look, like people are going to do the whole, well, he's won there five times, you know, who knows? I think Phil knows. I think this is less about, and for me, this is less about Pebble Beach than it is about a USGA event. You know, like USGA could go to Augusta and Phil would struggle there, even though he's arguably the best golfer at Augusta of all time. Shout out to Jack Nicklaus. It's just him taking on the USGA. It's just a hard tournament for him. And we've seen that in the last couple of years. You saw the madness at Shinnecock. That was one of my sidebar questions. Do you think we're going to, I mean, Will Gray had a tweet about this, like talking about the just insane things that have happened over the last 3 or 4 years. Do you think we get something that's as crazy or crazier than Phil hitting a moving putt this year?
Yes.
I hope so. It's so fun.
Yeah. No, listen, this is when you ramp up everything, people are more likely to lose their minds. And it's just so ramped up right now.
It is. You're right. You're totally right. But I do think that Pebble could be sort of a neutralizer for all that. But maybe not, you know, as Phil said, like the USGA, if they don't have a governor, then they can't help themselves. So I do hope we get something crazy, but no, I think you're right about Phil. I don't think he's winning. I don't think he's continuing. I think, you know, he said recently, I've got two more shots. I've got Pebble. I've got Wingfoot. That's it. I think deep, deep, deep down, he knew after Marion in 13, that was it. That's a wrap. That's done. You know, like you just, at some point you get to the age where you're like, this just is not happening, you know? And I don't think that, I think if you gave Phil a full claret jug worth of wine and he drank it, I think he would tell you that he's not going to win the US Open at Pebble this year.
Do you think he can win at Wingfoot or is this it?
No, I think it's over. I think Marion was it. I mean, look, he doesn't have a top 10 at a US Open since Marion, and he doesn't have a top 10 at a major anywhere since the 16 Open Championship. So it's just, I don't know. I'm dubious that his first top 10 in 3 years is going to come at a US Open. Now, the Pebble thing's a real thing because he's had a ton of success there. The storyline of him winning on his birthday, his 49th birthday, to complete the slam at Pebble would just be a joke. But I think he might have like a 67 in him, and you're like, oh, But then he'll shoot 75 and you're like, oh yeah, okay.
I'm gonna say that like when I mentioned 64, the 64 that I imagined was not a 64 that was gonna be in the line of a winner or in the line of maybe even like a top three or someone who's in contention. The 64 that I imagined was like a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning 64.
Yeah, it's like Sepp Straka. You're like, oh, it's Sepp shot a 64 today. That's sick.
Okay, and one more Phil thing. Can I submit a flaming hot take column idea should the pieces come together for it to be part of the conversation?
I'm ready. Let's hear it.
Being on social media has shortened Phil's attention span, and now he can't get through a 72-hole major. My column.
I think being 48 years old has shortened Phil's attention span.
All right. We haven't even mentioned the two-time reigning champion. We'll get into the expectations for Brooks Koepka and more on Tiger right after this.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
So Brooks, right? I mean, I think that because he doesn't have any arms left to curl, he's not interested in getting a third claret jug.
He can start doing leg lifts or dead, you know, something like that. So I was thinking about this, Chip. It's so weird to me because PGA happens a month ago. And everybody's just hollering from the rooftop, Brooks is the storyline. He's the only storyline that matters in golf. And we get to the U.S. Open, and I feel like, maybe this is just me, it feels like, oh, look over there. Look at DJ. Look at Spieth over there. Look at Tiger. Oh, Rory's hot. And it almost is unfathomable that Brooks could come in under the radar a little bit. For where, like, he's been flying. But it feels like he is, doesn't it? Am I making that up?
I think you're making it up a little bit, just because
okay, that's fair.
The Brooks is always going to be defined by his play, and all it's going to take is one good first round before all. I mean, well, it was the 63 in the first round on Thursday that just shell shocked us all, and we were like,
yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, we forgot. No. Yeah.
We did it again.
Right. And so I think that because that's almost part of the mental muscle memory of a major, especially after the way the last, you know, 2.5 years have gone, I don't think it would take much for things to adjust. I think that that goes back to like Tiger takes up so much oxygen. The Phil Mickelson storyline is so basic. I mean, I come down to those big topics, and then, you know, Rory coming off the 61. Like, yes, in the moment, it feels like Brooks Koepka is like the fifth or sixth name on the Rolodex. I mean, heck, I even, you know, we put him on the other side of the ad break for today's show, but I don't think it would take much within the context of the tournament. I mean, he could go out and just shoot like a 31 on his first 9 holes and we would immediately be back in it, you know?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it's fascinating what's at stake. So I went back and looked. Nobody's won 3 consecutive U.S. Opens since your boy Willie Anderson did it in 1905 at Myopia Hunt Club.
Was that a pitch and putt? The Myopia Hunt Club course sounds like it's a par 3.
I think they shot ducks in the afternoon.
Seriously.
I think there was like an addendum to the tee sheet, like the afternoon tee sheet. the shoot sheet.
Right.
He opened 81-80 that year. Don't think that's getting it done for old Brooks at Pebble in 2019. But so that's at stake. You know, Curtis Strange tried for it back in, what did he win, 89? Was it Curtis Strange?
Yeah, it was 88-89 or 89-90. One of those, somewhere in there.
So I think that in 90, let me look this up, he had a shot to go three in a row. And I think that was at Medina. I might be making all of this up. Okay, I've got it right here. 88, Curtis Strange, the Country Club. 89, Curtis Strange, Oak Hill. And then 90 was at Medina. Hale Irwin won, and Curtis Strange finished. Where did he finish? I'm not seeing it. He finished T21. So it's really hard to do, obviously. But Strange has talked about just the pressure of doing that. And I feel like it's interesting because Brooks certainly seems impervious to that pressure. Like I don't think he feels the pressure of winning three in a row the way a Spieth would or a Rory would, just because he's like, hey, whatever, like in a way that does seem somewhat real, right, and realistic. And so I don't know if that's going to get to him. It's just, I mean, here's the thing, Chip. Think about this. If he wins this week, the only active golfer that has more majors than him is Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could say the same about Rory, but it just feels crazier with Brooks because he just started winning majors 2 years ago.
Yeah, but how long has it been since Rory's last major?
Five.
Yeah, and all of his four were in a run. And I think that that's where I might have landed with Brooks. Like, if Brooks wins this one, yes, you're 100% right. But I think that I've decided, at least my resting point right now, is that he's on a Rory. This is like a Rory run. And I expect it will come to a conclusion at some point, and then we'll get to wrestle with what's wrong with Brooks for 5 years, and then he might come back and win a major. I mean, it's just, well, I'm kind of there with Brooks.
But does him winning this week change that? It seems like it just feeds it, right?
It does.
Like, I think the only thing that would change that is him winning a major in like 2022 or 2023.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, this is like an elongated, this is like a 10-year deal. It's like a 12-year deal.
Yeah.
I don't think him winning this U.S. Open necessarily changes that narrative.
I agree. I don't know. Man, doesn't the style of the win also matter, or do you think it's just the win?
I don't know about style as much as
who
as,
he beats,
locale and who he beat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think you can talk about, okay, Brooks won Aaron Hills over this guy named Xander. And you're like, okay, well, cool. But then when you talk about Brooks won Shinnecock over Fleetwood, who shot a 63 in the final round, you're like, oh, okay. And Brooks beat Tiger at a PGA. Like that stuff matters. And so to go Shinnecock Pebble in back-to-back years, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's in the same year you won Bethpage. I mean, Bethpage isn't in the class of those two, but it's still big time. So I don't know. I mean, it's a course that it doesn't, you know, going into Bethpage, I was kind of fading him, but the people that I talked to were like, you're an idiot. There's like four guys that can win this tournament just because Bethpage is so big and sprawling. And that's not, the way that Pebble's set up. It's short. It's like 7,000 yards, 7,100, something like that. And you're going to have to be so good with your irons, and he's good with his irons, but he's not Fleetwood good. He's not Rory good. He's not, you know, DJ good. Like his big thing obviously is driving the ball. And I just don't know that he's going to have that advantage here. Like he did at Aaron Hills, like he did at Bethpage and some places like that.
On the other side of the Joey D gym, we've got Dustin Johnson. You know, We made a quick reference to the change in the swing coach. I did not find myself coming out with any DJ takeaways from the Canadian Open. How is your compass adjusted on DJ at all, if at all, as we're starting to count down the hours to tee off?
It hasn't really adjusted. I mean, especially from, I mean, he was beating championship by two guys at the first two majors, Tiger at Augusta and Brooks at PGA. That's it. Those are the only two guys that beat him, which is kind of crazy because it doesn't feel like DJ's having a great major year. And I hate that. I hate that we do this thing where it's like, well, the only way you can have a good year is by winning a major. Okay, that's idiotic. That's so dumb. And I mean, I think he's going to be like right there again. And I think the fascinating part for DJ, I mean, there's a lot going on here, right? Like you've got his history.
Yeah, there's a whole lot going on.
His history in majors at Pebble, which is a completely different story. I mean, he shoots a 77 in 2010 in the final round, and he's in a playoff on Monday. But no, he shot an 82. And so, how good do you feel about like a four-stroke DJ lead on Saturday night? Not great, you know?
He's going to lose a ball, and Kyle's going to go charging off into the woods to go find it.
So I think that... I hope that he's in the mix just because it would be super fascinating for somebody who's like, and I wrote this, somebody who's very straightforward and just pretty simple. He's a pretty fascinating character when you start like taking into account all the variables from the outside, right?
Yeah.
Like I think that's pretty like Brooks and DJ are not super complicated people, but they have pretty complex storylines and narratives. And I think that part of it, like trying to figure all that stuff out, is pretty interesting.
Let's see, what else do you have on your storylines? What else is buzzing for you right now?
So one of the things that I was looking at, the top seven in the world all have a major championship. Three of them have multiples, but then the next eight do not have a major championship. So if you look at the top 15, the first seven have a major, the next eight don't. The next eight are Patrick Cantlay, Bryson, Xander, Ricky, Rahm, Kuchar, Finau, and Paul Casey. My daughter picked Paul Casey to win, by the way. Just getting that out there. Not feeling that one. But
No. I'll take Paul Casey to have a share of the 36-hole lead and finish T8. Do you like these very specific predictions?
Yeah, I love that you can't ever predict like a solo eight. It has to be a T8.
Yeah, for sure.
So, just one of them getting in the mix, I think, would be and one of them will be in the mix, I think. I don't know who. I don't know which of those guys. Obviously, Spieth. I mean, I have no idea. I've talked myself all the way around both sides of this, and he could win by five, he could miss the cut by 10, and I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Like, I don't trust him to win by five. Of all the outcomes that you are suggesting, I do not trust him to win by five.
I don't either, but I wouldn't be like, I mean, I'd be pretty shocked. That would be shocking.
That would be stunt to beat this field? Jordan Spieth, the way that he has been... to beat this field by five strokes would literally be like Mother Nature act of God stuff. Jordan just missed the bad weather and the high scores or something.
Well, but I go back to, was it 17 he won here? I think it was 17. It had that awesome year. And there was a text floating around from, we'll say, a top 25 player in the world who has won a major before. And the text was like, this is problematic. Mm-hmm. Because if he hits the ball like that, and that was the year he finished number one in strokes gained on approach shots. But the thesis was like, if he hits the ball like this, I don't know how people beat this guy. You know, and so.
Yeah, but I don't know how you go from like not being able to find the club face very recently to being the best ball striker in the world. I just think there's too much distance there.
I agree. And if I have to err, I'm going to err on the side of fading him. But I don't know. At some point it has to click, I think. I mean, if you believe it's going to click, at some point it has to click. And I always get concerned when I'm on the wrong side of somebody who I think is a historic player, because it can make you look really dumb really quickly. And I don't think that's going to be the case with Spieth at Pebble. I'm certainly not picking him to win. I'm not picking him to finish in the top 10, but it could be. And then we've got, again, a problematic situation on our hands.
Oh, man. All right, Kyle, pack your bags. You'll be in a glorious part of the country soon enough.
I guess we already did the Rory thing.
Yeah.
We did Tiger on Monday. I guess that's all I got.
Yeah, man. I really do feel like we're going to have our expert picks, and I'll have some tournament matchups that I will probably throw y'all's way just to see what your feelings are on them. But I feel like we've lined this thing up. I used to do this thing as a kid where I would like line up all of my action figures into this, like way before Avengers Endgame or Infinity War came out. Like I had all of the superheroes on different sides fighting each other, and it would take me like 3 hours to line them all up, and then the war would be done in 7 minutes. And I feel like that's what's going to happen, is we've been spending all this time lining up all the characters, all the storylines, all the character development's been there, and this whole tournament's going to come and go in 4 days, and then all of a sudden we're going to be like, shoot, what do we do about the winner here, Sergio Garcia? How do we reconcile this?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I do have somebody here who wants to make a pick. Jack, who do you think is going to win the U.S. Open? Who'd you pick?
Tiger!
Is that who you picked? Are you sure? I thought you picked Ricky.
Ricky.
Jack picks Ricky.
You're taking Ricky? Okay. Well, that, yeah. Sergio's not going to win, Chip. I hate to break that to you.
He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. He is Jack. You can follow him at Jack. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
At Jack. What a pull. Thanks, Chip.